Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, my name's Stuart Miles and welcome to the Apocalypse Podcast. Apple has held its annual developer conference, WWDC, in Cupertino, which I attended and revealed several new features of its various software platforms like macOS, iOS, iPadOS and WatchOS. Aside from the updates to its software, the company also launched an updated MacBook Air with a new design that supports the next iteration of its Mac processors, M2, and teased on the future CarPlay and advancements as well. Joining me to discuss all the news and what it means for you are Apocalypse's Britta O'Boyle and Rick Henderson. So without further ado, let's get straight to it. Britt, iOS 16. For me, this took the lion's share of the two-hour presentation. What was the most exciting thing you saw of the new features that it's going to have?
Well, so I think there were actually a couple of quite exciting things about iOS. I think the lock screen is cool. It pretty much makes iPhone have an always on display, essentially, which is what Android phones obviously had for a really long time. But I'm not sure that that was the most exciting, except for the Asian version of it. I actually really liked iCloud shared library. I thought that that was great because it means that you can basically share your photos without having to share your photos with everybody individually.
Yeah, I must admit, I thought that was clever in that sense. I don't know whether you have this. Is that, you know, you go to a party, you take a picture, and then you get to the end and my wife's always like, oh, can you share those photos with me? And then you're like, how do I do it? Shall I airdrop them? Shall I text them? Shall I, whatever. And so the idea of this is you just you have one combined sort of photo library, don't you?
Yeah. And I think the best thing about it was that you can do it directly from the camera app. There's going to be a button, isn't there, that essentially allows you to send those photos straight to that shared album. So it's great for like pet photos, kid photos, like anywhere that you'd actually... Like the amount of kid photos that we have that me and Matt share or share between us, but do it through messages or AirDrop, it's going to be great for us. I love it.
Yeah. Now let's go back to the lock screen. So I think that was quite a big thing. My personal feeling is that this is very much like the Apple Watch watch faces.
Yes, definitely.
For your iPhone.
Yeah.
And I can see, although Apple doesn't have an always-on display, it would make sense for them in iPhone 14 to launch an always-on display, so you can see these lovely screens, and you know they would do that cutout. And they were telling, you know, they were kind of detailing after the keynote as well that you know there is, you know, there's going to be a gallery of different wallpapers and all these, you know, very similar to the UI of the watch. Rick, do you think that works?
Yeah, definitely. I do like the look of them, like the customization options. But it was more the notification stuff that I quite liked that come up on the lock screen that will be happening in iOS 16, especially live activities.
Yeah.
As a massive football fan, it is annoying that you get like 20, 30 different notifications during a football match saying someone has missed a penalty or what have you. The fact that you get this as like a one widget that is permanently there, updating with live scores and live information. I really like that. That was probably, for me, that was the one bit that really stood out on the lock screen side.
Yeah, I thought the other thing, going back to that, harking back to that watch, and this is, you know, why I felt it was so similar as well. The widgets that you can get were effectively, as Apple Watch users call them, the complications.
Yeah.
They're the same code. So if you've got a complication on watch, then it's very easy for the dev to then just turn that and make that a complication or widget, sorry, on the iPhone. So it'd be really interesting to see how that screen that comes, you know, when you turn on, and I saw that you could also change you can have the pictures. This is where it gets really interesting. So the wallpapers can change, the pictures within the wallpapers can change depending on like on tap, daily, hourly, what have you. So you can float through. Or one of the things I found was quite interesting to do that, is you can set it based on your focus.
Yeah, I liked that.
And you can then, within going on from that, within the focus, you can then, so you could have a work focus screen. So like, you don't have a picture of your kids when you're in that mega board meeting with the boss, and you kind of, your phone pops up and there's you drunk in a bar somewhere or on a beach. You just have something boring and staid instead. But then I thought that what's new as well is that you can then take that focus further and say, right, well, after 7 o'clock, I don't want to see work emails. And so you can actually then within mail, for example, say, I don't want to see this account at this time, which, you know, again, is for that distraction. Those people worrying about, you know, I don't want to see my work email at 11 o'clock at night before I go to bed. I thought it was a really nice touch.
That also leads on to the fact that there's some changes to mail with iOS as well that means that there's better search, and you can unsend stuff, and you can, what's the other thing you could do?
You could schedule emails, which I thought was brilliant.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. And you can do the same in messages on iMessage as well. It means you can unsend stuff and edit, which is great, right? Even WhatsApp doesn't let you edit yet. So
the edit's really interesting because there is a 15-minute window.
Yeah, which is not
the
bad.
Editing. But I think I've got to get clarification on this from, again, talking to people at the event, there is this sense that it will reset every time you make a correction, that 15 minutes.
Okay.
So you can change it infinitely. So you can just keep on changing. But like, I'm not sure whether if you're a listener and you use Slack, it will tell you that it's been edited.
Right.
So if you've, the other person can see that, you know, you've written something and then you've edited it, it will say this has been edited. So you know that you weren't imagining that they'd said that they called you a babe when your name is Gabe, and autocorrect got you wrong, which is what they used in the event itself. But I thought that was interesting. The only thing they didn't have on parity with mail is that you won't be able to schedule messages yet.
No.
But you know, I think that's still a,
that's okay. I mean, WhatsApp doesn't let you edit yet. And I mean, the window is a little bit longer for unsending stuff. I think it's like 1 hour and 8 minutes or something really random. Like, it's a really strange time. But it's still good that you can unsend messages, or that you can edit them, especially edit them. I think it is something.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many times I've done that.
Yeah.
And what the irony was, I was even talking at the event. I then was talking to someone within the Apple PR team, and both of us made typos that we then had to, you know, then send another text to say, sorry, the above is a typo.
Yeah.
So we were like, oh, wouldn't it be helpful if we had this new feature now? So Rick, what was your favorite bit of iOS 16 before we move on to other things within the?
I think mine was the Apple Pay stuff, and specifically Apple Pay Later, which is not a new idea. Klarna does it, Amazon does it on its own websites, and PayPal offers a similar service. But being able to pay over with no interest, no fees, over four equal payments for a fairly expensive item is actually, especially during the cost of living crisis, especially now, is actually really handy. I do it quite a lot using both PayPal and Amazon, where I can spread the payments down to very, very easy chunks. Now, of course, this is something we've been doing since the 60s and 70s. I remember my mum having a Littlewoods catalogue and paying for my Sega Mega Drive, get this, over different payments. But you always had to pay interest.
Yeah.
So you always ended up paying more for your item than you did before. Being able to do that but not pay a single penny more than it's worth is excellent. That's really good. And being able to do that straight on your phone is, I think, is going to be a really handy feature for a lot of people.
Yeah. Now, this to be confirmed, but the word on the street, look at me, so down with it, down with the kids, was that Apple's just bankrolling this themselves. There isn't, they've just got, we've got so much money in the bank, let's just do it anyway.
The way that I see it is that's exactly how Amazon and PayPal do it as well. Because obviously, if you don't have the money in your account, you might only have the money in your account for the way that PayPal works. I don't know how Apple are going to do it, is it sends a little message to your bank saying, can this person afford the entire amount if needed? The bank says, yes, this person actually can afford the entire amount. So PayPal goes ahead and does it in the in the equal payments. So but then next month you might not be able to afford the payment. So obviously PayPal has to be able to bankroll that.
There's lots of things that we need to confirm on this, but it also feels that from what I can gather, this is just this will just automatically work with anybody that's already accepting Apple Pay already.
Yeah,
so there's that sense of
there's no further credit checks.
The retailers don't have to do anything. You don't have to do anything. It's just when it comes to paying, it's like, you want to pay by Apple Pay? Yep, great. Do you want to split over four payments? Okay, no problem. Yeah. Let's go.
And it's not a credit agreement either. You don't. It's not like you have to sign any extra forms or have a credit check, which is really important, because what people sometimes forget is that every time you have a credit check against your name, it takes away slightly from your credit score. I've turned it to Martin Lewis. Hang on. so you may not get credit in the future. So the fact that it does it without a credit check is fantastic.
And just to warn you, your financial investments may go up or down depending on. Please don't, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so let's that's iOS. So I think that's, you know, there feels like there's lots of cool features coming, including, you know, a couple of big standouts. And obviously, we're only on day one, and this is a public beta for this comes out in July. It will then probably come out in September. Yeah. Let's face it, that's when normally these things happen, although it's not been confirmed. It's still the fall. And we go from there. So let's wrap that one up. So great. And move on to Watch OS 9. Britt, what's your feelings on this?
So there wasn't loads announced with Watch OS 9, certainly not as much as iOS 16, but they did add sleep tracking in, like, I know they had it before, but it was not as good as other devices. Mm-hmm. So now you get a little bit more data, which is great for people that want that side of things.
I just want to say, what did you say? Jet lag's really kicking in already.
So you get REM sleep, or you get REM deep and whether you're awake, and that's exactly what Fitbit does. And you get the same graph, which is great because, I mean, if you are someone that likes to track your sleep, Apple Watch wasn't doing it as well as other devices was before. So I think that's definitely a big plus from that. And they've changed the workout app quite a lot. Often they used to add extra workouts, but they haven't done that yet. So whether that will happen in September or not.
There's I think there's triathlon, isn't there?
Oh, yes. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, there is.
I think so you could, it now can work out. They were saying it can now work out if you're running, cycling or swimming.
Triathletes.
So you can, you know, which is obviously really helpful rather than you having to do different things.
Yeah.
The one I think most interesting for me on that, and I know you're probably just about to allude to it, is interval training, which is kind of that multidiscipline approach anyway, isn't it?
I also liked heart rate zones. They're changing it so that you can use heart rate zones and that will come up on your watch face, which actually is brilliant for when you are training like that as well, when you're trying to do HIIT training and stuff. So that I'm very excited about.
You're not working hard enough, Britt. Keep running. Run faster.
You're being too lazy.
Yeah.
But otherwise, aside from that, I wouldn't say there was loads and loads of different things. There was a couple of accessibility things, a couple of notification things whereby it will just have a little banner at the top when you're actually using your watch that will come up, so it won't interrupt quite as much. If your wrist is down, though, you'll still get the full screen notifications on your watch. The calendar one was quite good, though, actually, because you can now add a new event from your wrist, which you weren't able to do before. So that will be good, I think. But aside from that, I wouldn't say
it did seem very sort of minimal. Like, it seemed to be like, here's four watch faces, like not even enough features that you can add on your fingers, and then we're going to talk about health and, you know, and medications and things like that.
That was just as well for me, because I'm slightly bitter about the whole experience, because I have an Apple Watch Series 3. And that means that I will not be getting Watch OS 9 on my watch. That's,
I think this is going to cause them a bit of, I can see, it's difficult, isn't it? I can see where it's going, right? The device is 5 years old, but people are still buying the watch.
And it still works really well.
And I know people have bought one in the last couple of months.
Yeah. And like Britt has just said, they still sell it.
Yeah.
So they're still selling a watch that they know will not be able to be updated. I kind of skipped over it as soon as they said that, as soon as I found that out.
Do you think, let's rumour mill for 2 seconds, presumably that means we'll get the watch Series 3 will retire in September, yeah, and we'll get something to replace it.
Without a shadow of a doubt. In fact, I'm waiting for that. To be honest, I was already planning to upgrade. So
the SE is a very good shoe in, though.
It is. Or, it is. My wife has an SE and yeah, she loves it. And it's, and I would say that it does everything that my Series 3 does anyway. So I don't
see it. Does everything that you would want,
yeah,
it to do, really. It misses out a couple of things. It misses out the always on display. It misses out on the sort of sensors for ECG and the SpO2. But it otherwise, I mean, you pretty much get exactly what most people would do with their Apple Watch on.
And it still has a heart rate monitor and it still has a load of other stuff. So, you know, the SE is a great watch. But yeah, obviously, I'm now having to look at upgrading.
Yeah, so if you're...
hopefully, there will be one this year.
Yeah, if you're looking to buy a new watch, don't buy a 3.
No.
That's basically the message, isn't it, from that perspective. Yeah. Well, not unless you want, you know, if you want the new heart zone heart rate. Because I was going to... My wife has a 3, and I was going to, you know, got home off the plane. I was like, hey, guess what? You know, I know you like interval training. It's going to be... Oh, no, there isn't going to be interval training on your watch. I won't say anything.
They might, though, do what they've done with the iPhone in the past, where they drop the price of the SE and then maybe keep the 7 on and then launch the 8 in September or something. Like, they might just drop the prices a little bit so that it's more accessible, perhaps.
I suspect that will be what's happening. Right, okay. iPad OS 16 and Mac OS Ventura. Was launched and announced, or announced certainly. That will come later in the year, like everything else. There didn't seem to be a huge amount on iPad OS 16, and some things on Ventura as well. A lot of these things, because of the way that everything is getting merged, a lot of the features that we've already discussed, like, you know, delayed messages and scheduled messages and things like that, are all coming to these platforms anyway. The big one seemed to be Stage Manager, which was a new way of interacting with your desktop. And I thought it was really interesting that it's yet another attempt to try and crack multitasking on your iPad. But to try and make it stick a bit more this year, they're also introducing it to the Mac. And so you'll get used to using it on your Apple MacBook or, you know, your Mac Mini or what have you. And then it will make a little bit more sense when you come to use it on your iPad. Having seen it on stage and having seen a demo of it, a couple of demos of it, and watched some videos online of people who've already downloaded the dev beta, I still don't 100% get it. But it's kind of, from what I can gather, it's kind of like it's like the desktop that you get on your Mac without the ability to save anything on the desktop, but only open 4 windows. But then have collect clusters of the apps that you're using that have got windows open down the left-hand side. You can't have them right down the right-hand side because I haven't thought of that yet, and left-handers, well, tough. So it's just, yeah.
There was one bit of it that actually made sense to me, and I, being someone who edits photos quite a lot and then drops them into our website, I can see the benefit of being able to take the photo and not have to then drag it down to the apps bar down at the bottom of the screen, mm-hmm, and then wait for the software to open so that I can then drop it into Photoshop, for example. You can have Photoshop just open already on the left hand side, and you can have your the website open in
and
the
it's
middle
not,
and just drag it across.
And it's not restricted to like just the two apps on the window, so you can have them floating in any way you want, at any size you want. But you can only have 4 apps because it doesn't support more than that. If you add an additional screen because you've got an M1 iPad Pro, for example, then I believe you can have another 4 apps. So you can have 8 apps in total. So from dragging from like, and you can open a file the files app, have that, and so you can then drag from files to files. But you couldn't seem to be able to drag. You couldn't have 2 files windows opened, so you couldn't drag one file from one folder to another folder.
What I didn't get from the event, and you can maybe clarify, Stu, is whether this will only be available on Apple Silicon devices. Because obviously I have an older iPad Pro prior to M1. And it wasn't clear whether or not it's going to be available on that as well, or whether it's just an M1, M2 feature.
That is something I'm not. I want to say it's M1 only.
I want to say it's M1 only as well, but
but I'm not. I couldn't. I wouldn't want to put my life on that.
Yeah.
Because sometimes these things that will change. What I did think was interesting on the moving on from that, the only other port I thought was really cool was, again, about continuity. It's this new feature called Continuity Camera.
That which looked
good. Yeah, I thought that was cool.
Allowed you to use your iPhone, as long as it's running iOS 16, with your Mac and treat it as a webcam in itself. That Apple got very excited by the fact that gives you center stage for any Mac, including Intel-powered Macs. And that center stage is that thing where it kind of it just follows you around as you're moving and all the other stuff. So, you know, that was interesting. There are some caveats. You have to have a 10R or above. And it doesn't work on the iPad. Like, you can't use your iPad camera. And to get that new desk view, which again, I think would be interesting for, you'll see a YouTube suddenly filled with like tutorials on, you know, here's how I made this craft work. And you've got people talking and stuff. It's the idea that you've got a camera above your head, you know, looking down. A typical how Apple always used to do those demos where, you know, they've got them on the desk. You need an iPhone 11 or above because it basically uses the wide angle camera that it knows that's sitting on the top of your computer.
But that is, it still works. From the demos, it looks great.
It's just amazing that it's only just coming out, really. You didn't think that this would have happened ages ago.
I did immediately think, though, is that he showed it with a custom clip that clips to the top of your Mac.
Yes.
And I'm just sort of wondering how much that clip's going to cost.
Yeah, well,
with Belkin, didn't they?
That's Belkin. So it shouldn't, I mean, it will be, it's probably going to be 50 quid, isn't it? But I'm surprised Apple haven't made that clip and charged you £100 for it. But there is, you know, it I thought it was interesting. And do I really want to sit in a coffee shop and balance my iPhone, my £1,500 iPhone off the back of my MacBook and hope that the clip works? I mean, you've got to, you know, it's got to be pretty robust, doesn't it?
My my iPhone's probably heavier than my MacBook, considering I've got the 12-inch.
So. Which is a wonderful segue, thank you ever so much, to talk about the new MacBook Air. Maybe you need to upgrade to this. Rick, do you want to tell us a bit about this and I can then tell you what I thought?
Yeah, absolutely. New MacBook Air, and specifically a MacBook Air that will debut the M2 chip. Now, the M2 chip, this is a little complicated in the fact that Apple has an M1 chip, an M1 Pro chip, an M1 Ultra chip, is it?
Pro, and it's M1, M1 Pro, M1 Max, M1 Ultra.
That's it. And the M2 chip kind of only replaced the M1 chip. It's not as powerful as the other three, really.
Correct.
But what it does do is it does improve performance quite dramatically, and specifically graphics performance, which is excellent. It even allowed them to start talking about video games in a more serious manner than they've probably ever talked about before. But the new chipset is coming in this MacBook Air, which looks pretty much like a MacBook Pro. And this is where you come in, Stu, because you've actually played with one.
I have, yeah. There was a demo after the event. We got shuffled into the top of Steve Jobs Theater, actually, for a demo area to play with it. It's very light. I mean, it is really light, certainly. Like, I would put it akin to the lightness of the iPad Air in that sort of, oh, if I cut it in my hand kind of thing. Very thin and, you know, noticeably so. It's that it's lost the, it's taken the brutal, robust sort of straight edges of the MacBook 14-inch, so you don't get the kind of that curvature underneath, or certainly even the wedge design that you used to get with the Air, and just kind of try to make it as thin as possible. To give you an idea of the thinness, it's, I think it's 11 millimeters thin, which is just only ever so slightly bigger than the 3.5 mil headphone jack that you can put in on the side. It is powered by the M2. The interesting thing about the M2 is like Apple are very keen to try and suggest that M1 is four different classes of chip. And so although this is the M2, it doesn't replace all of the M1 classes of chip. It only replaces the M1 class of chip. So you've got to see that the M1 Pro is better. You know, even the M1 Pro is even still even better than the entry-level M2 chip. So that's the best way to look at it. Although then they say that, and then they confuse things by saying, oh, well, yes, but we've also added 4K, 8K support for M2, which is obviously better than M1 Pro and M1 Max, but don't worry about that. And you're like, what? Like, yeah. What have you just said? So I think it's, you know, from a, it's gone up slightly in price. It's now 1250 in the UK, 1500 euros for some reason, and about $1,200 in the US. So it has gone up. They're still keeping the M1, the older M1 MacBook Air, because they wanted to make sure they've got that 999 price point. And they've put the M2 into the 13-inch MacBook Pro. That's the one with the touch bar. But I really don't understand why you'd even think about buying that, because the M2 MacBook Air is just light years ahead, so to speak, pretty much on all fronts. It looked really nice. It was the midnight. There's four colorways, the usual silver, gray, starlight, and then midnight. Sound like I'm just gonna start singing and bursting into tune. And the midnight's kind of like, it's black, but in one light, and then if you move it slightly in the shine, it becomes blue. So, which was nice, but it was a very nice device.
It did surprise me that they didn't adopt IMAX style coloring.
Yeah, me too. And I'm quite for the MacBook Air.
I thought that would be the differentiation between it and the Pro. That you would be able to get a more fun color.
Yeah, no. if you want color, the thing I did think was kind of a new direction for Apple is that the MagSafe charger, which it now comes with, bring that back, hey, is braided, they've started doing elsewhere on some of the like the Mac Studio and things, and it's the braided color is the same as the color of the device that you buy. So if you get the midnight one, you get kind of a slightly blue cable, and if you get the silver gray, it's a darker cable.
Well, there you go.
Wow.
It does look good, you know, and I am tempted by it anyway.
Now we've got a few more bits and pieces that they kind of teased or alluded to. One that interested you quite a lot when we were talking about this earlier, Rick, was CarPlay.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a big CarPlay user in my vehicle of choice, and it has needed a kind of refresh or a redesign for a while. It just needed to come into the Apple family a bit more. It looks like an old iPhone basically when in operation, and the new CarPlay looks exactly like that. It reminded me immediately of the Apple Watch, the design language of the Apple Watch, with the different fonts and the way that widgets worked and just different things. But my big question, for starters, it's not coming for a while. It was a tease. But my big question is, will it be backward compatible with existing CarPlay vehicles, or will it only appear on new vehicles from, I think they said, 2023? You might be able to answer that a bit more, Stu.
Yeah, but it's late 2023. I think the interesting thing about CarPlay that I took away from the announcement was that they are keen to, at the moment, it is just an infotainment system. You get in your car and then you say, oh, I want navigation support, or I want music. And that's kind of all that CarPlay does, isn't it, really? Coming late 2023, and then probably, so that really in reality means 2024 by the time you actually, you know, the car is in a car and then you can actually buy the car and go on the road with it, is that they're doing what everybody else wants to do at the moment, which is design and develop the entire car ecosystem, like telematics and everything. Think Apple Car, but in your Volkswagen or wherever else you can put in. I think Kia and quite a lot of cars support Apple CarPlay now, don't they, anyway?
Yeah, most.
But this is Apple taking over your dashboard, effectively.
Not just Apple said, by the way, 94% of car manufacturers now support
everybody, but everybody but Tesla, basically.
Yeah.
So you know, this is Apple not just wanting to give you the opportunity to use Apple Maps or to use Apple Music in your car, but it's the ability for them to provide you with all the telematics, so your speed, your energy efficiency, all of it. And if you could think that they can do this to cars like Jaguar or Land Rover or what have you, and control that all of a sudden, it suddenly means that everybody's got an Apple car. Remember, Rick, a long time ago, we used to talk about Apple TV, and it's like, yeah, Apple were going to make a TV. And then they just came out with the interface and stuck it with that. I perceive this is their new goal for CarPlay, is that let's not worry about making the whole car. Let's just make all cars look like the car we want them to be inside.
That's exactly my takeaway as well. I think the constant rumors of them making their own car is actually a red herring. I think that the team that they've built at Apple to work on car stuff is entirely focused on working with manufacturers to essentially run all of the software within their cars.
Yeah.
So your dashboard is part of the CarPlay experience. I don't know if people have seen the Mercedes EQX, the incredible Mercedes futuristic cars that they're developing, whereby the entire dashboard across the passenger side as well is an OLED panel. That's kind of the idea behind CarPlay as well. Everything is a touchscreen. Everything is a screen, and you have widgets, you have weather information, you have everything you could possibly want, all run through one central infotainment system. And that's what Apple wants. And I think that's what the Apple car team have actually been developing. I don't think they've been developing an actual car.
Kind of makes sense to do it that way, though, because actually they're good at software. So,
yeah.
And car manufacturers aren't really.
Yeah, and less good at axles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it allows them to get in the game without getting too in the game, because it turned out they never needed to buy, you know, never needed you to buy a TV, because they were making TV on lots of different screens anyway.
So, I am surprised though that they never got a manufacturer to put Apple TV as its central platform. That is one thing I am surprised by.
You never know.
There we go.
Yeah, you never know.
Now, the final thing, just very quickly, talk about wasn't announced, which is that there was lots of rumours coming up and lots of hope, perhaps, that they'd launch AR glasses. Now, the rumours went from they're going to launch everything to it would just be the sort of a tease for it, just to get developers ready and from a framework perspective. Obviously, there was a lot of announcements in the 2 hours that they had on stage, but no AR glasses. Britt, why do we think this was?
Maybe it wasn't ready, or maybe the platform for it wasn't quite ready, or I don't know. There's so many rumors about it that there's no smoke without fire, right? So I feel like there's something coming, but maybe it wasn't quite where they wanted it to be yet. Although it is quite strange, because you'd think that they would have said something about it so that developers can do something with it in time for a launch later on this year, but perhaps it wasn't quite there. Maybe it doesn't meet their requirements, like that air power mat that didn't make it.
Yeah, that never made it. Yeah.
I wonder if AROS, which we did expect to be at least teased, it's so big for them that they're actually going to plan a special event just for it. And they didn't want to muddy the waters, because they're so proud of iOS 16. Clearly, they dedicate so much time to it. They're so proud of the way it now looks that maybe they just didn't want to soften the story.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to say that. It could be that they mentioned something in September at the big fall event, but then, you know, actually have a proper event in October like they do with the second, you know, when they kind of have the second thing. Could be that they, you know, we see something at the beginning of next year. I think for me, I suppose it was a bit of wishful thinking that it would be really nice for them to have. I thought personally they might use WWDC as a one more thing just to tease, you know, this start thinking more about AR devs, get, you know, think about it a bit more, because something is coming. We're not going to tell you what. And then that kind of starts to build momentum. Apple products do really well when there is that momentum. I remember even covering the original iPhone launch, and that was a good 2 to 3 years before the iPhone, you know, came out, that they might be doing something about a phone. And every time you'd go to another event, it'd be like, oh, nothing about the phone this time, you know, is there going to be something? And then when it did come, you were like, Oh yeah, that all makes sense now, because they've been educating you behind the scenes for the last couple of years that this is coming, and that's exciting. You know, and therefore it's not a shock when it does appear, because you're like, oh, why, that makes obvious sense, blah blah blah. What I did think was interesting was that every announcement at WWDC, and as I was sitting there watching it, everything you could sit through it, this is going to sound really cheesy, but through a certain lens you could say, oh yeah, that would be perfectly suitable for AR, or that would make perfect sense for AR, or oh yeah, that's a really good idea for a pair of AR glasses. You know, all the stuff in iOS, like the live text, the translation stuff, you know, these the better dictation things, you know, the watch faces, all these things adding up, you know, the CarPlay stuff, all of this stuff, you go, yeah, I could easily see, just bolt that into a pair of glasses, off you go. So I think it's, for me, it's not very much a if now, I think it's just a when. I think we will see AR glasses from Apple in good time, when we're still trying to work out and pin that down. But I think that, you know, this is clearly, everything is gearing up to get all the tools and all the, you know, all the capabilities ready, so when they do launch something, you go, oh yeah, okay, yeah, I get it now.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't an accident that it wasn't announced at WWDC, for sure, because it never is with them. So
even the silicon stuff ties into it. More power efficient, smaller, generates less heat.
Yeah. Cool. And with that, that's all for this week's show. Thank you ever so much to Britt and Rick for joining us and discussing everything. Thanks for listening. Until next time, pip pip.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.